Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
Time for our international news review. For that, as always, we go to Steve Okun, our amazing friend, senior advisor at McLarty Associates, man about town, and international news guru. Steve, good Sunday morning to you.
Good morning, GBZ. You know, it's been about a year since I've been in Topayo. Has it changed much?
Oh, it's a garden spot. You got to get up here.
Well, invite me to come to the studio again.
Actually, Topayo is a very interesting place, as many of our viewers and listeners know. Of course, the Queen and Prince of Edinburgh came here back in the day, and this satellite town, as it once was and now is still, as well, it keeps developing, keeps getting bigger. The new Raffles Girls School, of course, is here across from Raffles Institution, and it's such a centrally located spot. It really is extremely convenient, of course, to the different expressways, the CTE, the PIE, etc. So it's good. Yeah, we got to get you back in the studio. You know, we hopefully in the next couple of months we'll start to have our guests come back into the Money FM studios. We've been distant because of COVID-19, but we're seeing that we might have some light at the end of that tunnel. So we'll hope to have you back in the studio, Steve.
Can't wait. We're both getting our second jabs in a few weeks' time, so hopefully sooner.
Indeed, indeed. We will be, hopefully we'll be safe by then if we don't have too many variants of COVID-19 popping up before. Okay. Hey, let's start a week from yesterday. There's going to be this ASEAN summit on Myanmar. And, wow, where do we even start with this? First of all, tell us what we know about this summit, and then we'll talk further about it.
Well, I mean, we're at a terrible crossroads in Myanmar right now, and you can see it going in one of four different directions. The cover of The Economist said Myanmar shaping up to be Asia's failed state, making it similar to Syria, where it's going to devolve quickly into civil war. And then on the other extreme, you have options where people see the military staying in power and people in the country eventually accepting it and the global community eventually accepting the coup. I don't really see that happening. So the question is, what is ASEAN going to do? Are they going to engage actively within Myanmar's internal actions in terms of the military and get them to back down and get them to accept civilian rule? It's something ASEAN hasn't done before, but I don't know that they have much choice this time.
Steve, early on in the coup, right after the coup happened in early February, a number of the ASEAN nations came out and very kind of clearly admonished the military junta to stop it, to get back to some sort of normal, democratically elected government there, as had been elected in November. But since then, they've kind of backed off some of the strong rhetoric, preferring to say, well, we're working behind the scenes and et cetera. Have you noticed, as I have noticed, a sort of a slight change in the posture, at least of the public statements that we're seeing from ASEAN? Or is that just my perception?
No, I mean, I think I think they got a little bit out, and you had, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore pushing ASEAN to do more than it historically has done within the borders of its members. You see the pushback coming from, Thailand and Vietnam for that more engaged, active role in ASEAN, and things are only getting worse in Myanmar. And, I've talked to a good friend of mine who lives there, who is working there. And the internet's getting cut off. The military is getting stronger in its actions in terms of murdering people. Mm. Shooting people in the back of the head, coming into homes and killing children, either directly or indirectly through just random violence with their firearms. And so it isn't getting any better. And you can't have. I don't think it's in ASEAN interest, one, to have a failed state within ASEAN. Second, you are not going to see the U.S. engage with ASEAN if you have the leaders of this, military junta at the table with them. And I mean, maybe a reason why the U.S. hasn't found its way out to ASEAN with cabinet officials yet, although they've certainly been in India and Japan and in Korea under the Biden-Harris administration. So ASEAN's going to have to it's going to have to do more, or it's going to have and change the way it has functioned internally, or it's going to have a failed state. It's going to have refugee problems. It's going to have pandemic problems, and it's going to have geopolitical problems, because you're going to have the U.S. and the EU in on one side, and you're going to have potentially China and Russia on the other side. And you don't want to see that happening in ASEAN either.
Yeah. We're talking with Steve Okun, the senior advisor at McLarty Associates, in our International News Review, talking about what's happening in Myanmar, our first stop on the International News Review today. We don't know what we don't know, but we will certainly see what happens next Saturday. It seems as though there is a lot of pressure being put on a lot of countries now, and it would be interesting really to be able to pull that curtain back and see diplomatically what's going on outside of the public view. Let's hope that there is a lot happening and that this can stop, although we certainly haven't seen any results, positive results, I guess, at this point, of it stopping anytime soon. So we'll keep our eye on that. And probably next Sunday, Steve will be able to talk a little bit more specifically about what happened in that summit with you. Let's move on, though, if we can. Vietnam was on a list of currency manipulators, or at least close to it. Tell us about what happened with the U.S. Department of Treasury on Friday as it relates to Vietnam, Switzerland, and Taiwan.
Well, this was a this goes back to what the Trump administration had done, and the Trump administration view on trade and the president's view, President Trump's view on trade, was all about the deficit. And Vietnam had a massive surplus in trade, so the U.S. had a deficit in trade with Vietnam. Vietnam, you know, somewhat controls its currency. The question is, does it control its currency in a way to gain a trade advantage, as determined under U.S. law by the United States? The Trump administration determined that they had, and they were going to put massive tariffs on Vietnam, the same as they had put massive tariffs in on China. It was walked back at the last minute in the Trump administration. And so this is the Biden administration now formally walking it back even further, saying there is evidence that there is intervention with the currency by the Vietnamese government, but not where it will rise to the level that tariffs need to be placed on Vietnamese goods by the United States to retaliate for those tariffs to give Vietnam an unfair trade advantage. So there's still intervention in as the U.S. found with the Vietnamese currency, but businesses have taken a huge sigh of relief when at the waning days of the Trump administration, those tariffs weren't placed on Vietnamese goods.
Yeah, this is an ongoing challenge in this part of the world. The U.S. has often and historically blamed China for manipulating the yuan as well. Switzerland and Taiwan were listed and talked about on this in this announcement as well. Did that take you by surprise at all?
No. I mean, again, it's where countries have more control over their currency as opposed to having a freer float of their currency. But you'll see the list come out. It's kind of a, you know, somewhat, I guess you could say, a shot across the bow by the United States saying, hey, we're watching this. Don't cross a line. We sort of know where that line is. And so not a surprise when you get put on a watch list. It's when you get found to be manipulating your currency and tariffs come on board that is a real impact to a country and to the businesses operating in that country. I don't see any nervousness right now in the U.S. business community as there was back in December when we were having call after call about what was going to happen, where we were writing as the business community, the AMCHAMS, the U.S. ASEAN Business Council, to the U.S. government saying, don't put this is not currency manipulation. Don't put tariffs on. This is the impact it's going to have. We're nowhere near there. So I wouldn't worry about it from a business perspective.
This is quite different, I think, than the Trump administration's approach on some of these issues, which is, one morning we'd wake up and there'd be a tweet, you know, X country is manipulating its currency. You know, we're going to do X or Y to them, versus this more measured approach that we're seeing from the Biden administration on a variety of regional and global issues, which is take that first step, which is, as you just mentioned, we're watching you, right? And that is the first kind of lowest level diplomatic shot across the bow. Do you see this as kind of the way that this administration is different than the Trump administration, or one of the ways it's different?
It's a way every administration is different than the Trump administration, right?
Yeah.
The strength of the United States is being part of a rules-based system in which, frankly, the U.S., you know, helped write, was the lead in drafting a lot of these rules. And when everybody buys into the rules and everybody, you know, works together in this rules-based system, it benefits everybody, including the United States. Donald Trump didn't see that. Donald Trump said, we are the United States are the biggest economy. We have the biggest military. It is to our advantage to work bilaterally. And so we are going to impose a unilateral rule on whoever we want. And it could be China, it could be Vietnam, it could be Canada, it could be Mexico, it could be Japan, it could be Korea, it could be Singapore. It's a total reversal of that unilateral approach to foreign policy and to trade, and back to what is really in the United States' advantage, which is working within an international system where there is rules-based order. And that's what we've returned to.
So instead of rules-based order, it would be tweet-based order in days gone by, perhaps?
It would be bully-based order, right? I'm going to bully you until I get what I want because I'm bigger than you are. Joe Biden is not. Joe Biden and Kamala, they are not bullies. And the United States shouldn't be bullied.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. There was a significant public statement made this week in that the Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga was the first official visitor to the White House, leader of state, leader of a country, head of state. What does that say? You know, as he met with Joe Biden, of course, they talked about reaffirming ties and all the usual things that the leaders talk about in the U.S. standing up and backing up Japan in its issues with China, territorial issues, etc. What does that say that Japan was the first country in versus Canada, Mexico, the United Kingdom, one of those others?
Okay, it says a lot, right? I mean, it is who the president meets first as president. It sends a very clear signal on what is most important to the United States, to his foreign policy, what it says about where the United States is going directionally. And to have Japan be the first sends a lot of messages. It's a message not just about the strength of the U.S.-Japan relationship. It's about the U.S. focus on Asia and that the U.S. is going to be engaged in the Asia-Pacific. It had, you know, we could go deeper in terms of, I think the significance is certainly having the word Taiwan. Now it's Taiwan Straits, but it was the word Taiwan in a statement following the leaders meeting between the U.S. and Japan, the first time that's happened since 1969. And that was before the U.S. normalized relations with the People's Republic of China. But it also gave practical solutions about what the U.S. and Japan could do in the region, putting billions of dollars into 5G. So that switch away from the Trump administration. Trump was, don't you dare do business with Huawei countries because we don't want you to. Whereas the U.S. under Biden is going to work with Japan, is going to work with others to say, we're going to give you an alternative to China. So a lot that came out of this meeting.
Going forward, would you expect Biden to reach out, for example, to South Korea, to Taiwan directly? You know, there are these new rules now about engaging with Taiwan at the official, highest official levels. Is that still too sensitive to go direct and do direct talks with Taipei, or would we see that maybe, or perhaps with South Korea?
Oh, well, certainly you'll see South Korea. 100% you'll see South Korea. No, you will not see a leader-to-leader meeting between the United States and Taiwan. That would go against U.S. commitment on a one China policy. You don't have an embassy in Taipei. You have your embassy in Beijing. You will not see a leader to leader meeting. You will see an increase in lower level meetings between the U.S. government and Taiwan. I mean, I was in Taiwan. It was has to be about 4 or 5 years ago, where a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State was in Taiwan. So meetings have occurred before, but you're not going to see it at the leader level. That would be beyond a step too far for China and where the U.S. and China are right now when it comes to the Straits.
Mm. All right, talking with Steve Okun, a senior advisor at McClarty Associates, and our International News Review. The last topic we have to talk about is an internal U.S. political topic, but it is one that could shape the way the U.S. is perceived and what happens in the U.S. and even at some point U.S. policy if another Republican administration gets in the White House sometime soon. And that is this America First caucus in Congress that is now distributing materials calling for what they call, quote unquote, a common respect for uniquely Anglo-Saxon political traditions and a return to architectural style that benefits the progeny of European architecture. We kind of laugh at this, right, because it's just so unbelievably out of touch with traditional American values and where we are right now with American values. But having said that, we shouldn't discount the what's going on behind the scenes here as well. What do we know about this movement, shall I call it, or at least this outreach?
Well, I mean, it's beyond out of touch. It's outright racist, right, mm-hmm. where you have at least two Republican members of Congress, Congresswoman Green and Congressman Gosar, calling for a caucus that would basically be based, you know, it's basically a white person's caucus. And others aren't welcome. And it goes against immigration. It goes against any assimilation. It goes against all the multiculturalism that is what is made, you know, the United States, great. And the question is, can the Republicans prevent this, shoot it down, punish those who are behind it? And you've had some Republicans come out and do that and say, you know, this is hateful. And this is Republicans talking about what people in their own caucus are doing. Now, the question is, are you going to have the House Minority Leader, the head of the Republicans, what is he going to do? He tweeted out a statement very much against it. But is he willing to take away? He has authority. He could take away their committee assignments and he could punish them beyond that and take away their rights to really be engaged in the Congress other than to have a vote. So this is, you know, the Republicans are in an issue now because they have things that they can stand on. I mean, they can argue against the tax increases that Joe Biden is proposing to pay for all of the infrastructure. They can hammer, you know, the Joe Biden on immigration right now with all the troubles at the border. Not that they did any better, but there is a lot of issue concern that Americans have on that. But having this be what the Republican Party will stand for is just going to really harm them. So they have a real internal issue they got to take care of.
Having said that, we have seen the Republican Party stand by over the past 4 years, 4.5 years, when outrageous things were being said about minorities and people of color, everybody basically. And they have not admonished their members, generally speaking. You know, Adam Kitzinger, who is one of the politicians from the state of my home state of Illinois, has been one of the few that's been vocal against this particular faction. So we're not yet seeing a full-throated repudiation of this racist language. Is that concerning?
Of course it's concerning. And it's concerning to Republicans too in the Congress. But they're going to have to decide, you know, what are they going to do about this? What is their party going to stand for? How much are they going to continue to embrace Donald Trump and the type of language that he used, you know, calling Mexicans, you know, rapists who've come across the border, you know, calling for the Muslim ban? I mean, all of this is not a surprise that there's elements of the Republican Party who are there. There are lots of Republicans who find this, you know, loathsome. But what are they going to do about it? And And so much of this gets tied to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump has the energy of the base behind him. He's the one who brings in all the money the Republicans are going to need to run, you know, in the midterms in 2022 to try and get the House and the Senate back. So this is a political headache that they absolutely don't want, but they have to address it if they are going to really be a viable center right party that is going to represent a core part of the American people.
Kind of interesting that those exact sentiments have been aired for the past 6 years, at least. The Republican Party is going to have to determine who they are. This is something people keep saying over and over again, and they haven't done it yet. I mean, when are they going to actually do it?
That's the question. Look, I mean, Donald Trump won fairly, right, in 2016. What's happened? They've lost the House, they've lost the Senate, and they've lost the White House since then. Uh-huh. And so if they haven't learned that they're going to keep losing unless they come back to, you know, taking the positive elements of what the Republicans have stood for, and there were elements of which they stood for in the past 4 years, but they've got to get rid of this part or they're going to continue to lose nationally and become a minority party. And if it weren't for the gerrymandering, if it weren't for the Electoral College now skewing Republican, they'd be much worse off. But this is a reckoning coming. In U.S. politics, it's been coming, and let's see if the Republicans can find a way to appeal to a majority of the country. And this isn't the way to do it.
Yeah, Mike on Facebook Live is asking, what's going on with H.R. Bill number one? So House Bill number one, this is for the People Act. It is about expanding voting rights, changing campaign finance laws, was introduced on January the 4th of this year. Do we have any updates on that? Have you heard anything?
Well, this gets into the minority protection and kind of the Electoral College and gerrymandering and all that's favoring the Republicans right now. There aren't 10 Republicans in the Senate who will vote for this bill because Donald Trump has convinced most Republicans, something like 65%, that he lost only because the election was rigged, only because of voter fraud. And you need the type of voting laws, then, you know, Glenn, we discussed this, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, that you see in Georgia that make it tougher to vote. So you're not going to get 10 Republican senators to vote for this. So then the question becomes, will the Democrats get rid of the filibuster and allow legislation that gets to constitutional rights like voting and on race to be passed with a simple majority? We are not there yet because you don't have enough Democrats who are willing to do that. So unfortunately, Mike, you're not going to see H.R. 1 pass in the Senate probably anytime soon. And I can't imagine in this Congress.
Yeah. Okay, Steve. Great. Good stuff as always. Thank you for being with us on our International News Review. We took you a little bit over time. Hope you don't mind too much. But I hope you'll enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too, Glenn. Anytime.
Thanks, Steve.
International News Review. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.